All right, so a little little pre-conversation. Jay knows I'm changing the question up a little bit, but I'm not changing it up much. And Jay, I'll let you go first before we start the show. When speaking about OBJ and, you know, Antonio Brown, the question is now, have the off-field antics, do they now officially outweigh the talent they're putting out on the field? Back in the day, Randy Moss was a head case. Terrell Owens, LT, but they all performed. They all got it done on the field. No one can say what OBJ is doing off the field was warranted this year on the field. He caught 2 touchdowns all year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, yeah, have we finally reached that point?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, everyone has their phone, which is essentially a magnifying glass where you get to enter into these people's personal lives. I like Russ was alluding to, I like when you get a flare of an individual and you get to see them as, like, who they are. That makes them a, you know, individual human. But, like, this shit's getting banana lands. Like, it's dumb. It's literally dumb, the things I've seen athletes do this week. And it's, like, if I own a team, go away. I would not employ them to represent my team if I owned it.
Yeah, I think, Russ, I think you'd probably agree.
I don't think it's going to change his employment status, I'll say that. Because OBJ, this is, for lack of a better, or wanting a better term, this is normal diva shit. Like, he was throwing out money, maybe fake, maybe not. Depends on which LSU player you talk to. And slapping a cop's ass. I can't imagine how many times that's happened without, you know, cameras all around. And that's just, hey, it's 2020. There's always 5 cameras on you everywhere, even if you're in the bathroom in a club. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but we're seeing more things now that I'm sure happened before. And he shouldn't have done it. And he's trending that way. But I think I'm still more worried about AB, who's shouting at his ex-wife in public and everything. Him, I would say, has crossed the line that I wouldn't want any part of him.
No, I mean, OBJ maybe still offers a little bit on the field, because the antics haven't reached that far. But, yeah, Antonio Brown, anybody touches this guy, they're just asking for, you know, just a big, big pain in the butt. Both
on the field. He came out with a rap song called No More White Women.
Okay.
It's there's something not going on right with Antonio Brown.
Jay, is that your most played song on Spotify right now?
Not yet, but it's about to be. I mean, I didn't know that I can listen to Le'Veon Bell and him, so now my collection's complete.
The stats.
But more importantly, Vrabel has come out saying he wouldn't actually cut his dick off to win a Super Bowl, so that mojo's gone.
The salt.
I mean, I can't function right now because this, my man just dropped like a bomb on me because it's going to happen. I think he's right.
The sanity.
I'm the host. I don't have to answer the questions I ask, but I'm going to answer this one anyway. I'm going to
Yes, you do, damn it.
And every so often, they talk about sports, too. Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
Time to live. Time to love. Time to live.
All right, another week. Lots of sports to talk about. Same 3 guys. It's not getting any newer, but you know, the opinions don't change. We all have something to say. Bring in Russ Ivanek. Russ, how are we doing today, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing all right there. It's weird. We don't have any more college football, yeah. But we ended on a high note.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. It's weird though. Like we spent the last, I don't know how many weeks talking about football, and I feel like football's a sport we never really stop talking about. Even when it is over, we're still talking about it to some capacity. But it is weird. I looking through everything, and I'm like, wow, we're starting to reach that point where it thins out a little bit, and we don't have anywhere near as much to talk about. It's a daunting time, but it's a nice little relax. And, oh, by the way, we have the XFL coming pretty quick.
Oh, I was going to say, there's always Red Wings hockey.
I like the XFL. Give me a failing football league that we know probably won't make it 2 years over the Red Wings any day.
Hey, Chad Ochocinco tried out as a kicker, so who knows? At least it might be entertaining.
Oh, yeah. And, Jay, I heard you coming in on the Red Wings thing, so we all know you're here. How you doing today, pal?
I'm good. I don't know what else is happening in this world anymore, but I'm here. I haven't videotaped a police officer today or slapped a police officer on the ass. So I'm having a good day.
2 for 2.
Yeah, that's not bad. I mean, you could live a little, but, you know, your choice, your life, you do what you need to do to get through. It's fine. I mean, on the other side, you could be a guy like Joe Burrows, you know, won the Heisman, won the Natty, and then proceeded to spend the next 20 minutes sitting in a room smoking a giant cigar with a hat that said Big Dick Joe on your lap. I mean, hey, that's a life choice as well.
That decision he made instantly made me be like, all right, I'm all on board. I don't care where he plays quarterback. I'm going to watch him. He was just casually like, yeah, I just won a national championship. I need to smoke this stogie.
So Baker lost your allegiance. You changed over to Joe Burrows?
Oh, yeah. Just like the seasons changed, I did too. I'm on to the next one.
Well, since Jay is a big fan of him, let's talk about him. Listen, 31 of 49, 463, 5 touchdowns. Didn't really miss a beat from the previous game against Oklahoma. I mean, this team steamrolled. They started out a little shaky, couldn't get outside of their own end zone. You know, a couple very fortunate punts by Clemson made it so that they had a long field to go, and they had to bide their time. But at the end of the day, if you beat a team by damn near 20, a team like Clemson, you know you did your job pretty well, and I think every single bit of it goes right through Joe Burrows, Jay.
Yeah, it was elite football, and that's what we saw. I mean, like, I compare it to other quarterbacks watching Lamar Jackson pissed off in the playoffs and watching Deshaun Watson trying to put something together. Like, he was just riding a bike. He didn't want to be messed with. He was in the zone, and he was focused. Like, those are the things that you can't see at a combine, and that's the stuff that's going to make him make millions of dollars. So, good. You know, Trevor Lawrence is still a great quarterback, too. He just didn't have good stuff that day, but that was must watch TV, and I was pretty damn happy I sat down to tune in.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. This was one heck of a team. I mean, you got a running back busting, 16 carries for 110. One of your receivers 221. Oh, by the way, you had another one goes for 106. So you had everything kind of firing. But speaking of Trevor Lawrence, Russ, I mean, 18 to 37, 234. But they kept him out of the end zone. And all in all, I mean, outside of putting up passing yards but no points to show for it, they really kept this offense the rest of the way in check. No running back over 80 yards on 15 carries, no receiver over 80 yards, and the number one receiver had 5 catches for 76 yards. All in all, LSU kind of played the complete keep every bit of this team in check.
They did, and they did it with constant pressure on Trevor Lawrence. Yep. It looked like every single time that he dropped back, the pocket just slowly constricted on him. I think they only came away with 2 sacks, but it was constant pressure. When you go 18 for 37, I mean, first off, he was made to throw 37 times and wasn't doing it particularly well because of the pressure. But then they only let him run 10 times, which is something that he's gone to in the past to kind of alleviate when teams take away the pass. And it didn't work all that great. It was a very complete effort from LSU, and it was staggering to watch it because coming into this, they had a good but not – they didn't put up the kind of metrics that Clemson did on defense, and it looked very much the opposite for almost the entirety of this game that somehow started 17-7 Clemson. What the hell?
Yeah, no, Clemson actually got out to the right start, and then they couldn't keep going, and they couldn't stop LSU from doing what they wanted to do. It was a very, very tough situation, especially you are Trevor Lawrence. Hasn't lost a football game since I think he was in, like, middle school or something. The guy is
exactly wild.
The guy is prolific in every sense of the word.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't feel too bad for him. He'll get over it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, he'll get over it. I'm trying to find it here because I don't remember the name. And of course, it's not going to show me the name. I don't know if either
Just
you guys remember.
Him. Does he have glasses?
No. I don't know if you guys remember this, but in the game, it was funny because it was number 3 on number 3. There was a very, very, very big hit by an LSU safety as a receiver was going up for the ball. I mean, you saw this guy fold in half from getting hit from behind. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those plays where I saw that, and I think it was pretty early on in the game. It hadn't really, like, nothing had really transpired yet. And I watched it and goes, oh, LSU's going to win this because they're going to kill everybody. This defense played about as physical as I've ever seen a defense play. They were firing on all cylinders and gave Trevor Lawrence next to no time to do anything with this ball, Jay. I mean, that was a pretty intimidating defense that I'd argue, I don't think there's an offense that we've ever seen that could have competed with them that night.
No, I mean, they were all in all the time for that game. I mean, yeah, the first couple possessions for both teams didn't, I mean, it was more like a feeling out period in a way. I was like, okay. And then Clemson took a little bit of a lead, and then just LSU just drove this thing home. It was nuts. I remember the play that you're talking about. I couldn't tell you the kids' names outside of, you know, quarterbacks and running backs, but it was a hard hit. But Pete, like, I think it was a crossing route too, like 10 yards down the field, and he got lit up. So I mean, it was phenomenal. It was damn good TV, man.
Oh, it was amazing to watch. And again, this next little topic here, I am piggybacking off of someone, so. Giving credit where credit's due. Right after the game, after we had watched, or after it all had transpired, Dan Leach put out a tweet asking, was this the most dominant team or the most dominant season we have ever seen in college football? And, of course, other people have brought it up, too, and talked about it. And who would we be if we don't just follow suit here? So, Russ, I ask you because I went through it, and I thought kind of really hard. Obviously, we don't remember the early 90s and before, but, you know, I would say since about when Michigan won their title, maybe right after that, I can remember almost all the college seasons and a majority of it. And outside of those USC teams with Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush and Lendell White and all them, I don't know that we've ever seen a team play this high level of football for this long of time and, you know, dominate as hard as they did.
Well, I'd point to last year's Clemson team as the gold standard there to compare to. Now, granted, LSU just trounced what was 70% of that team. Really, the starters coming back. Clemson lost three first round picks on defense. So yeah, it's a little bit different. But I think that's who you have to compare them to, and we just saw a big comparison there. It's staggering what they've done, though. To your point, if we're talking about the best ever, do we start with first number one seed to win the playoffs, beating seven teams that were in the top 10, only allowing three games the entire season to be within 10 points? I think we can go back and forth on if they have the most talent or they have the best players and whatever. You know, is it the best collection of talent really put together? But this is, I think, undisputedly the most accomplished college football team we've ever seen. Best year out of quarterback ever. Only the second team since 1900 to go 15-0. This was phenomenal. In a sport driven largely by your quarterback, this might have been the best year we've ever seen from a quarterback in college football ever.
Okay. Right?
He averaged a touchdown per quarter.
Yeah, no, I mean,
insane.
And that was the kind of the weird track for me because as the game was going on, they kept bringing this up because he was, you know, Joe Burrow was in the hunt for the most touchdowns in a college football season. Obviously set, mm-hmm. I don't know, like 10 years ago or so, maybe a little bit further, by Colt Brennan, who I played for Hawaii. I was a big fan of Colt Brennan. I was a big fan of that offense because that offense was as high octane as you could get. They didn't run the ball. I don't think they actually had a running back on the team. I think they just stuck a receiver back there every once in a while. But it was just high octane, not playing in a real, you know, conference. They played in the WAC, so the biggest thing they had to do was deal with Boise State every year. So it was, you know, it was that. But Colt Brennan, to me, I watched that season, and I could still remember that season, and I went, no one will ever do this again. It was, nobody could throw the ball that many times in a real conference and be able to do this. Well, I was wrong. Joe Burrow did it by like five touchdowns. So that's fine. I can live with that. But I agree with you that this is probably the most accomplished and most, you know, dominant season we have ever seen from a football team. And I think that says a lot for the fact of, I go back to those USC teams. Those USC teams didn't lose for 2 years in a row. They were walking up to like almost like the high 20s for wins in a season before they lost to Texas. You look at these Alabama teams we've had for the last decade. Some of these teams just steamrolled to the point where it was like, should we maybe put them in the NFL and just see what we get? We don't know. It could do. They could end up making the playoffs in the right division. So to say that this is that we've seen that most accomplished, I think it's insane. And I mean, this would be almost impossible to quantify. Not that I'm putting this challenge on Russ, but hopefully he'll take it as a challenge for a later show. I would wonder, is this the most dominant season we've seen in college sports, period? period. I mean, you have to go back. Wooden won like 9 straight national championships at UCLA with, you know, with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and them.
That might have something to say about it.
Yeah, they had some great years. I mean, there have been other teams that have just had those kind of years where it wasn't even close to anyone else. But it's an interesting conversation for a later date, obviously. But, I mean, Justin, we let Russ give his opinion. I gave my 2 cents. I mean, as far back as you can reach, your Sparties have never done anything like this, but and neither of our Wolverines, so don't get me wrong.
There we go.
But can you honestly say that in all the years of watching college football as much as we do, you've ever seen a team like this?
No, it's going to Madden or NHL and being the 99 overall rated team and just playing anyone. It doesn't matter. Like my depth of watching college football isn't probably as deep as the two of yours, but that's, if you're going to try to make something perfect, that's pretty damn close. I mean, Joe Burrow was 60-for-6 on the year for touchdown interception ratio, 10-to-1.
Yep.
That's insanity. That's insanity, man. Like it honestly, I was just astonished that it's hard to even try to analytically or just like emotionally be like, well, this happened here and this and that and this call, because like they just destroyed it. So as far as, to answer your question, as far as I know, yeah, I've never seen a better team on the field that has been put together, especially for the national championships. And the thing that Russ said about the second team to go 15-0 since the 1900s, holy crap, if that's not enough evidence right there.
Yeah. Now, I just want to give you guys a perspective. And this is, again, this is holy crap, but I'd like to put it out there. Russ, I don't know if you'll agree with me. I guess I'll ask it. Who, in your opinion, is the best quarterback to ever play at Michigan? I personally think it's Chad. I think it's Chad.
And strictly what they've done at Michigan.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying, though. Like, I'm talking about the,
okay. Yeah.
In college. We're not talking about NFL right now. I'm talking about the best guy to ever put on the maize and blue. Yeah.
I guess for what he did, it might have to be Chad.
Okay, so just
Mr. Chad Henne, obviously.
Yeah, Mr. Chad Henne. So just to put it in perspective, Joe Burrow's, Jay said it, Joe Burrow's finished this year, with 5,671 passing yards, 60 touchdowns, and 6 interceptions. Just to give it some weight of what he did, Chad Henne, who I think is one of the best to ever put it on at U of M, he was prolific, finished his career with 9,700 passing yards and 87 touchdowns. He was a 4-year starter. That just shows
which leads Michigan history, mind
yes.
you.
Which one of the longest running programs, the winningest program in college football, that guy's the best we ever had at it. And it just shows, well, I mean, again, it's a different time, different thing, but it just shows you Joe Burrow's almost threw for as many touchdowns in a year as Chad Henne did in his career. Obviously, 20 more touchdowns, but still,
longer.
That's insane.
Yep.
It is insane.
And Henne had 37 interceptions. What was Burrow at this year? 6? 6. Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah, believe me, I'm just pointing it out. Now, well, let's see. 37. Yeah, I mean, so you averaged about 9 interceptions a season?
Somewhere
give or take?
There.
Somewhere around there? Okay.
Yep.
So, still, I mean, that's not that bad for, you know, he only threw 3 more interceptions a season.
Oh,
than
no. Yeah, that's my point. That's not bad.
No. But I'm just saying that it just shows you the magnitude. The fact that years ago, what he put as a stat line across the board would be considered great for a career in college. It just shows you how opened up this game has become in the time, you know, in the last 20 years. Because, you know, Chad Henne obviously left in 06, 07, so.
7, yeah.
Yeah, so.
For reference, 60 touchdown passes would put you 4th all-time on the Michigan passing record book.
Yeah, I'd believe it. He's got
between John DeVar and Denard.
I was going to say, it's probably what, Henne then.
Henne, Gerback, Navar.
Okay, yeah. I could have sworn Navar had the records before Henne took them, but yeah, I guess that makes sense. Makes sense.
I think he did. Yeah. For yards, he did.
Okay. It's crazy. And, you know, unfortunately, Joe Burrow is no longer there. So we'll see what this LSU team can do next year. But, I mean, I got to think Clemson's probably coming back for some revenge on whoever they play next year, because this Clemson team is not losing its best player. put whatever you want around them. This is a Clemson team that I think we're going to see in the national championship 3 years in a row. I really, really do. So
how long until it becomes how everyone was happy Alabama didn't make the playoff this year? How long until Clemson becomes that?
Short, very short.
But see, for me, I don't think it is that because, again, this is my perspective. You guys may feel differently. I don't view Dabo Swinney as a villain. I think that Nick Saban really is viewed by a majority of college football as the villain. No one wants to see Nick Saban get it because he's kind of like Belichick. He's very shut off. He's very short with people. You don't get the real emotional side of it. He's very, you see him always screaming. When he talks to reporters, he's kind of short and quick with them. He doesn't really give you, that feeling of, someone you want to relate to. So I think a lot of people hate seeing him lift a trophy at the end of every year. Same as a lot of people hate seeing Bill Belichick lift a trophy at the end of every year.
Well, to that point, Clemson now tied with Alabama for most appearances in the playoffs. And to quote a certain movie, you either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
There you go. See, I think it's going to depend on the next year or two and, what kind of players they get and all that. But I think a lot of people see Dabo Swinney as the underdog, that's the guy that's been able to thwart Saban. Kind of the way for a while there, Tom Coughlin was the guy that was able to thwart Belichick because he got two championships on him, on teams that should not have lost to the Giants. So yeah. It's that. And I think it'll be interesting. But, I mean, it's the same as, you got to think that LSU's not going to drop off that much in a year. I mean, yes, you're losing a big-time quarterback, but I got to think you got someone waiting in the wings that's prepared. So,
Or there's always the transfer portal.
Oh, God. I heard the other day there's the quarterback from Houston. He's one of the top prospects. LSU's on his short list of schools to go to, so you never know. The transfer portal has become a thing. Big, big deal now.
Can we talk about the underlying thing with that, though? Is if Joe Burrow didn't transfer from Ohio State and still became this, how miserable that would be?
You and I would be horrible. That would be horrible for you and me. But,
oh, my God.
See, that's the thing. It's the downside to the transfer portal is that college football is becoming a free agency now, where I committed to your school, but you know what? You're not letting me play, so I'm going to leave and go somewhere else without having to sit out my year. You are creating a free agency-esque way. But at the same time, if the transfer portal doesn't exist, we may never hear of Joe Burrow's in this capacity because Joe Burrow's left because he wasn't getting a chance in Ohio State. Well, if there's no transfer portal, he's got to fight it out. And, we may never hear of him because there's no Justin Fields. So you got to wonder what happens there. It creates a big jumble of questions, but at the same time, you got to remember at one point, Ohio State had JC Barrett, who they were very big on, Tate Martell, who went to Miami and then just disappeared off the face of the earth. And
Crocodile got him.
Yeah. And Joe Burrows, three quarterbacks that are all amazing. And somehow they couldn't find enough field for all of them and make it work. So it is interesting. If transfer portal doesn't exist, we never hear of Joe Burrows. Joe Burrows is a second-string quarterback at Ohio State who may get some mop-up time. It's very interesting. It's very crazy. But, hey, I'm sure we'll be talking about at least one of these teams here in about another year or so since they will be back in it. Switching over, though, got our last little bit of football to talk about until next week when we find some reason to talk about football. Our Detroit Lions made a couple hires. We talked about this last week in giving our grades. And listen, one of them I'm excited about. The other one I have just – there's not a lot on him other than he was with the same team for, a decade. But I don't find a lot out of him. And what I see of him, I feel like he's going to spend more time worrying about that his hair is perfectly manicured than if he's actually playing.
Hey. That is a nice set of hair you got up there.
It's Cliff Kingsbury 2.0, my friend.
Don't hate people who have gorgeous hair, because I already do.
I know, that's fine. So let's, you know what? That's fine. Justin wants to defend the hair, so we'll let him defend the hair. I'm going to say this name, and I'm going to say it wrong, and then someone else can correct it. I am going to call this dude Braden Coombs for the rest of his life, because that's what it looks like to me. If it's Coombs, it's Coombs.
Is that not it?
If it's Combs, it's Combs. I don't know. It should be Combs with what he does to his hair, but I'm going to say Braden Combs.
Oh, God.
Braden Combs.
What do you have against his hair?
Listen.
Yeah, he's a big anti-hair guy today.
You're a football coach. You're a football coach, and this dude looks like he spends more time making sure everyone's in the perfect spot than making sure his special teams is ready to go. Hopefully that changes.
Cincinnati was the number two in terms of special teams efficiency last year. The man can look good and do good.
There we go. Braden,
they're not exclusive.
Listen, 10 seasons with the Cincinnati Bengals, including the last 7 as the team's assistant special teams coach. What I like there, he didn't bounce around to 13 other things. He wasn't quality control, then wide receivers coach, then DBs coach. Then he went over to the, you know, working here and working there. He's been in one facet, which means he understands that facet perfectly. Is it the biggest part of the game? No. But is it a part of the game that can definitely change things for him? Absolutely. I would say so. Someone's looking.
He did bounce around a little bit. He kept his special teams responsibilities, but he was also an offensive assistant, quality control assistant, defensive quality control, and offensive quality control in the last 10 years. And somehow the dude's only 33. Like, that's an astounding amount of experience for being only 33.
Absolutely. But I do like that he is focused on that one spot. We know he's not going to try to, you know, his eyes aren't wandering anywhere else. He knows his responsibility because he's been doing it for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, what jumped off the page for me, literally when I was reading everything about him, he had positions of quality control, and we have no quality on our team. So, like, his resume could have been his name, his dog's name. I understand that, like, they don't. But behind closed doors, I mean, he's probably controlling the quality of what he has or what he's responsible for, whatever. He could have gone through his resume, and it could have just said quality control 2000 blank blank, and I would have said, done, you're on our team. The team has no quality. And I know I'm being, like, a dick about it, but, like, we're bringing in quality control. That alone, like, is like a warm, fuzzy blanket around our den. So, it's better than what we had last year. We didn't have quality. So, if it's cute or not, that's all I'm going off of.
Absolutely. And, I'm giving the guy the benefit of the doubt. I'm giving him a hard time about something that has nothing to do with his coaching ability. It's just for fun. Obviously, Braden, if you're listening to this or you hear this at any point, we love you. Please don't hate us. But I think it's an interesting hire, but I like it because it has a clear cut direction. Like I said, this isn't someone who hasn't had the same role for more than 1 year. It's not someone who they want to keep in the organization, but they don't want to, you know, they don't see him ready to take the next step. So they just fill him into a different spot somewhere else. This is someone who stayed in a position in some respect for a while, and he's good at it. So it's a good hire. Over on the other
side. You know what path he's kind of following?
What's that?
The Harbaugh-Joe Judge path.
Yeah, no, I agree. I can see that.
Throwing that out there.
Yeah, I can see that, and there's nothing wrong with that. Listen, John Harbaugh got a job as a head coach from being a special teams coordinator. That tells you something. The guy has been there for a while. He's had some decent success there. I mean, the guy's got a Super Bowl, and he just put up one of the most prolific offenses the NFL's seen in a long time. So it's definitely, I would agree that that's the thing. Head coaches today come out of some very weird paths. You don't get the guy that, like I guess to use it, you don't get the Belichick, the guy who started out as a special teams coordinator, moved up to the defensive assistant, became the defensive coordinator, got the head coaching job. Guys are capable of skipping steps now because teams can see the potential and the, you know, they can kind of guess the trend these people are heading in. You don't have it the way it used to be where you had to go through these specific spots to get there. You can kind of pogo stick around and see where you land, and it's worked in some capacities.
Yeah, as long as you're not Freddie Kitchens.
No, Freddie Kitchens, you can't skip steps.
He hasn't skipped nothing.
Well, what's worrisome for me is our boy Matt Patricia technically hasn't skipped steps either, and I don't see a upward trend right now.
On the other one,
we hired our defensive coordinator. Again, I'm going to guess on a last name. I'm going with Corey Undlin. I'm assuming that's right. You never know.
Sounds right.
Good. Close enough. Good enough for company work. Listen, this guy, I'm looking at his, as we know of, resume, And this guy's definitely stuck to one side of the football for a majority of his career, and that's it's not a bad thing. My one thing is, as far back as I'm looking, we'll say since 2008, so 12 years, he's been a defensive backs coach almost everywhere he's went. I'm just a little curious, since we had this with Pasqualoni, where Pasqualoni was a D-line coach, not a defensive coordinator. It gives me some questions of why in all those years has he not gotten a shot at D coordinator somewhere? Most of those teams are pretty good. I'm just questioning why a D coordinator job hasn't come his way yet.
Well, it depends. Do you want to count California Lutheran?
Well,
I mean, of course not.
I know, I get what you're saying. But that's why I said we can keep going back, but the problem is it literally says either defensive coaching assistant or defensive backs coach on 10 of his positions along the way. Now, that's the other thing I'm saying, though. He's been a defensive coach in Jacksonville, or defensive backs coach in Jacksonville, Denver, and Philadelphia. All three are teams that at some point or another in his stay had very, very good defenses. So it means that when he's there, he's a part of something good, and he's been exposed to what's the right thing to do. I mean, we were talking, it was either last year or the year prior, Russ, was this Philadelphia defense one of the best defenses we had seen? Those guys were flying all over the ball a couple years ago, probably, I think, when they won their Super Bowl. But so he's been around the right thing. It's just it's questionable to me of you've been at all these stops. I feel like in that amount of time, a defensive coordinator job had to have come his way. I'm just curious why somewhere in that way he didn't take it. Maybe he didn't feel he was ready at that point, and he does now. You never know.
It's a fair criticism. The only thing I can think of is, hey, he's 48, and he's had a lot of different stops at different teams. So I don't know that he's gained enough trust from anyone to get that promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, Pasqualoni was 70 years old. So, adding on another 20 years to his coaching resume, and he still hadn't been anything but a D coordinator a couple times in college, that's more concerning. But it's a really fair question as to why he hasn't gotten his shake yet. The only thing I can really guess is that the coaching regimes that were employing him kept changing. Like, hey, he worked for Cleveland. We know that's a factory turning it over, right? Denver, they had a change in coach. Philly, no, Philly, but he's coming here, right? That's his change. My only hope is that the ship gets turned around and this isn't another one-year stop for him.
No, that would be amazing if it wasn't another one-year stop for him. Believe me, I agree. But see, like, and I was looking at this, and I get you're in a way, you are kind of comparing the potential with what you know you're getting, but it was kind of a stick out to me. Before he came here, he spent since 2015 with the Philadelphia Eagles as a defensive backs coach. That's good. He stuck with the team, and he really saw it through. They had a lot of success there. My little curiosity is, Jim Schwartz didn't come to that team until 2016. So was he just not all the way ready yet and management wasn't ready, or they knew what they were getting? Because in his career, Jim Schwartz has actually been a very good defensive coordinator. He just wasn't ready to be head coach.
He's a psychopath,
absolutely. Just ask Jim Harbaugh. But it's that thing of... And again, it's going to probably be put to rest once I see this defense and I see what changes he's making and how him and Patricia work together. It's that little nagging thing of you've been in the NFL this long and someone came in and took a D coordinator job over you and you had been with the team prior. I just feel like most teams would rather promote from within. But hey, again, I'm speculating on a very, very thin thought.
But if there's going to be one team to break that ice and that barrier for him, and if he's an utter, failure, it would be us. So we're all going to go down this path together.
I agree with that, Jay. But at the same time, I'm just saying, like, we're sitting here, and the jabs all aside. Like, yeah, we're Lions fans. We can poke fun at our team, but at the same time, we're doing this to spark the conversation of, are we really getting better, or are we just perpetuating the cycle where we're saying we're ready to make that next step, but we're making higher? And again, I don't know Corey one bit. The guy's been in the NFL for a long time, so clearly he's pretty good at what he does, because If he wasn't, this wouldn't read NFL, 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 NFL. It would read NFL college, NFL college, high school, junior college, NFL. Like, you know, he would have done a lot more bouncing in and out. He's been in the NFL for, from what I can see, 20 years consistently, 16 years consistently. So, I don't know him from Adam, but I'm just trying to say, we saw what happened last year. We brought in a D-line coordinator or D-line coach from Boston College. It didn't work. We all agree Pasqualoni was in over his head. My one little issue with it, I would have liked to have seen defensive coordinator on his resume at either a D1 level or NFL level at some point. Even if you had gone 5 years without being a D coordinator, it's going to happen. You know, we all know that. I would have liked to have at least seen a coordinator job on here, so I at least know, you know, the role you're getting yourself into in some regards.
Well, let me try and give you a little bit of ray of sunshine here.
Okay.
Two sacks, would have been tied for third amongst the Lions defensive players this year. Of the defensive backs on Philly last year, two different defensive backs had two or more sacks, being Jenkins and Skandrick. The Lions, in the last 5 years, have only had one defensive back get at least two sacks. Hey, maybe that's where we get some pass rush.
Yeah.
We all know that we're sorely needing that. So he's doing something there with the pass rush coming from some defensive backs occasionally.
Yeah. Again, I say, I know I'm being the bad guy here, and I know I'm asking the...
No, it's a fair question.
I understand it's a fair question, but, you know, it also... It brings up the, you know, that conversation. So, I wish these two the best. Obviously, we're going to be talking about them a lot over the next, you know, couple months, because we've got the draft coming up. We got free agency. We've got... The fact that the Lions are going to trade Matt Stafford and sign Tom Brady.
Okay. Get out of here.
And all the Coke and dreams.
Yeah, we've got training camp. You're going to hear these guys' names a lot over the next couple months, because we're going to be talking about them a lot. But, you know, for right now, it's weird. The NFL, we're almost done with it. We've got one more part of the NFL to talk about, another week or so, and then we get a little break from them. We'll start talking about the Dead Wings again. Before we do our predictions for the upcoming week of playoffs, I want to bring up one other air quote here, potential hire that I find very, very interesting. And I don't know if either of you guys saw this, but former Cowboy coach Jason Garrett is interviewing to be the Giants offensive coordinator this week. And I think that's amazing, because talk about staying in the division. I believe one of you even said that to me. It's just, it's very, very interesting that this guy is getting a job in his own division this quick after being fired. And that, to me, feels a little bit like the Giants saying, I wonder what he can tell us about this team.
Yeah. I think that's part of it.
Game planning for two games.
Yeah, we're going to hire you for two games. They might be the most two important games of the year for the Giants, though.
Yeah.
I will say, I do love the in-division pettiness. That being said, Joe Judge coming with no head coaching experience, it makes sense to have a coordinator who has some head coaching experience that he can lean on, especially in the division. And not that it's worth too much, but the team that Jason Garrett played for the most when he was a player was the Giants. So this is a little bit of a homecoming for him.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he's got his rings with the Cowboys, so.
Well, yeah.
You've officially made it so that Jerry will never let you back into that organization again. If there ever was a chance for it, you've pretty much shut the coffin now. But
could you imagine working for Jerry Jones on your first day of your new job? You're like, there's no rules. You can do what you want. You don't have the big man watching down on you.
Oh my god,
like, that's got to be day one for him.
Well, but that's the thing. Like, if you're him after all those years. You probably loved it because it was the most job secure thing. If Jerry didn't want you there, he was going to tell the media before he told you. So you knew you were safe if he was okay with you in the media. But at the same time, exactly. The Eagles, the Giants, and the Redskins are three teams that I have circled as, if you want me to be your towel boy, I would be happy to, because this is going to be the most fun job I ever had compared to working for Jerry. So it's an interesting one, and I hope he gets it. I think it would be great if he got it, because you know that storyline, the old coach coming back to Dallas for, you know, this week as, you know, Saquon Barkley takes on Ezekiel Elliott. And it'll just be a lot of fun. But at the same time, if you're Jerry, you got to go, listen, we have to change everything. He will know what we're going to do. Which, it's not really a surprise. Their main offense is give it to Zeke right, give it to Zeke left. Zeke's not open. Dak run it because Dak can't throw the ball. So, it'll be a very fun, interesting thing if he gets this job. And I do, like you said, Russ, I love the pettiness of the in-division rivalry. It's a lot of fun. All right, moving on. We have NFL football. We're almost done here, guys. It's, you know, a couple games left, but the two games we have, pretty good. I would say they're pretty good. We got Tennessee, Kansas City, Green Bay, San Francisco. I mean, listen, I did not see a Tennessee victory over Baltimore. I really did think this was going to be one that Baltimore was going to be there in the final game playing for the Super Bowl. And, Jay, Lamar Jackson and that Ravens team, they just could not get anything going. And what hurt them most was that Tennessee could not be stopped on the ground. Derrick Henry is having a postseason, at least, for the ages.
Yeah, this could be his best season for the remainder of his career. Even though I half-assed just picked Tennessee because they took down the Patriots, I'm not going to say I called it or anything. I probably should have gone with Baltimore realistically, but they got into the Ravens' mind and just shut it down. I'm going back to Lamar just frustrated. He slammed his helmet a couple of times, mm-hmm. and he had his hands up to his temple a couple of camera shots. So it's just they did what not a lot of people probably expected them to do, other than my wild-ass estimation, but it's going to make for entertaining football because looking into their schedule next, I'm even stuck on that one too. So it was entertaining as hell to watch.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Lamar Jackson, 31 of 59, so just a
59.
Yeah, 59, so just a smidge off of 50%. 365, one touchdown, two interceptions. Now, see, this is where I find it interesting. 31 of 59 for 1-2. But Lamar Jackson had 20 carries for 143 yards. So he was getting it on the ground. If you're that team, hey, listen, Lamar's not throwing the ball well today. Maybe we really should just, you know, well, we have to throw every so often, but we should really focus on maybe just running an option kind of offense with him. You know, he's lethal on the ground, but we also can't, you know, we can't miss on the fact if he gives it to Ingram or gives it to someone else or we have an end around. I really think this is when Harbaugh kind of he thought he's a quarterback. But the problem was this team was struggling a little bit in the air. I mean, you had one guy who, you know, had 126 yards receiving. The next guy had 50. So it was one guy having a great day. Everybody else was kind of hit or miss. And Lamar Jackson was, throwing 50-50 balls, basically. They needed to make some kind of change, and they never did. And that led to what you're saying, Jay, a lot of frustration. Lamar Jackson was on cloud nine, probably thought he was probably prepping for his speech when they handed him the Lombardi trophy. But the problem was he didn't realize Derrick Henry was going to have 30 carries for 195 yards. I mean, this guy is just an absolute freight train. And the thing that I think's the craziest of it all, Russ, it's Ryan Tannehill leading this offense. It's not Mariota. It's not someone. It's Ryan Tannehill from the freaking Miami Dolphins that's leading them through this.
Oh, I love it. It makes Adam Gase look so bad.
So bad.
Tannehill and Devontae Parker are both having huge seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Gase is over there going, you know what? I don't think Le'Veon Bell's going to be able to get it done for me in New York. Oh, buddy.
Well, and if you're Ryan Tannehill, this is your audition for keeping the job.
Oh, this is money. Every week he is just putting more money in his wallet, just getting new wallets to put more money in. It is unbelievable. And he should, however many wallets he fills up, he should give half of them to Derrick Henry. Because this is ridiculous. The irony of Baltimore getting knocked out of the playoffs with pretty much the exact type of roster that they built in 2000 to win a Super Bowl is hysterical, with Derrick Henry playing the role of Jamal Lewis. It is 2020, and you're rushing the ball 30 times and killing a team. What mm-hmm. is happening? This is not the NFL. Derrick Henry looks literally chiseled out of marble in huge, in bigger proportions than any human should be, and he's just doing whatever he wants out there the entire time. We've seen him before. He'll do it in stretches, but not consistently like this. Like, I am astounded that it is 2020 and a running back is taking over a game like this. This was supposed to have been dead, and Derrick Henry is somehow David and looks like Goliath.
I mean, I would argue the last time we actually saw a running back be utilized this much and taken over a game, and they didn't even use him when they needed to, was that year Seattle played New England in the Super Bowl. Marshawn Lynch was probably the last time it was give it to Marshawn, let him chunk out 4 yards, give it to Marshawn, let him break for 20. And that's what they're doing with Derrick Henry. They're saying, listen, you're going to get stopped a couple times, but you're also going to break for a few, and we're going to live with that, you know, that balance, because we own the clock now. You have to, whenever you get the ball, you have to score, because we're going to eat up so much clock that you don't know the next time you're going to get the ball. And it's a strategy that's working for Brabel right now. It really, really is. It's a lot of fun
really
to see.
It really is.
No, and
did you hear the Tyrann Mathieu quote about trying to tackle Derrick Henry?
No.
He said he thought he broke his jaw trying to tackle him.
Oh,
that's what we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I mean, the guy really is he's an armored truck. He's just a beast of a running back, and it's fun to watch him. It really is. It really feels to me kind of like watching old school football back in the days when, we had a great running back, so it made sense to do it. But like back when you'd see at the end of the day, Eric Kramer only threw the ball 15 times because we ran the ball with Barry 42 times. But Barry finished the day with 220 yards rushing or something. So
it was, and nobody touched Barry.
Exactly.
Whereas everyone touches Derrick Henry, and they're worse off for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a lot of fun. So that's one side of the Tennessee. The Tennessee makes it through on that victory. Now, on the other side, I'm doing this with 3 weeks in advance, because in 3 weeks I will be going to Houston to visit family. And I would like to apologize to the city of Houston, because I'm 99.9% sure I jinxed you. At one point, you were leading this game 24-0. And I sent a text to these two saying, wow, Houston is really giving it to them. Not what I expected. I proceeded to turn the game off. I proceeded to turn the game off for 5 minutes to flip over to something else, because I figured 24-0. Okay. I came back and it was 51-24. Kansas City just took it to these guys in, I guess, the final three quarters, pretty much. Kansas City put up 28 points in the second quarter alone, followed by 13 and then 10. It was an absolute dismantling of a football team. And listen, this one's tough for me. Russ, I know you're a fan of Deshaun Watson, too. But I really wanted to see the Texans go. To me, this was a team that, if anyone was going to do it, they had the ability. They had a run game. They have a quarterback that can, you know, can throw the ball, but he can also work with the football, run it, keep the clock moving. They've got some great receivers. That defensive line and defense as a total is pretty good. But, oh boy, did Kansas City just look like they were ready to put everyone who had any doubts to sleep. We are going to destroy everyone.
Oh, they did. They won by 20, and they played only two quarters of football. If you look at that game, it was the second, it was the third, and it was done before we got to the fourth. Absolutely ridiculous how they just took everything out of Houston after it looked like they had the game in hand. In 8 minutes, Travis Kelce had 3 touchdowns. Like, it was just unheard of, and it reminds you, no lead is safe against Kansas City. It does not matter if you have questions about their defense. They'll put up 100 if they need to. It's amazing. And you're right. I am disappointed that Houston couldn't make it further. Between Deshaun Watson finally being healthy and Watt, for everything that he does to the community, just would have been nice for him to get a win. But no, they go home in the most brutal fashion imaginable.
Well, but that's a point I wanted to bring up, too. No one, I think, is probably a bigger fan of J.J. Watt than I am. The guy is great for the city. He genuinely cares about the city and wants to do right by them. And he's stuck there through bad teams and good teams. He's been a face for that team. But it's a double-edged sword, because, one, how much longer can the city of Houston expect J.J. Watt to stay there, knowing that this is a guy that deserves a ring and, you know, he needs to get a ring, and whether if he's going to get it in Houston or not. But the other thing is, J.J. Watt played in that game, and he had no tackles, no assisted tackles. He virtually did nothing in the game. So it's that double edge of, okay, how much longer can we expect JJ to stay here and not get a ring? But also at the same time, can JJ really be, you know, complaining about it when he had nothing to contribute to this game?
Oh, and JJ Watt is 30 years old and has played 16 games in a season once in the last 4 years.
Exactly.
Luke Kuechly just retired at that age. Mm-hmm. We're seeing it more and more. How long does he even keep playing football?
Yeah, no, and that's what I'm saying. It's one of those ones where if there was a guy that you don't want to see finish his career without a ring, I mean, listen, yep. The Hall of Fame isn't a question for J.J. Watt. He's more than likely putting on a gold jacket once it's time. But it's just the fact of this is a guy that you would really like to see have a Super Bowl ring on his hand, especially for the city of Houston, because he's been there. He's done everything he can to be a part of that city and really help them. But the problem is you have to start asking the question. Like you said, he's 30. You're seeing guys retire earlier and earlier now because they don't want to risk, you know, shaking when they're 50 because of so many head injuries. But at the same time, he hasn't really been the healthiest of guys. You have to start wondering, how much longer does J.J. Watt have to win a ring? And is Houston the place that we're going to see him do it? Or is he someone who we're going to see, you know, take a contract somewhere, take a little less money, but take the contract on a team that's got a great shot at winning? So it's an interesting one, but, you know, we'll see what comes out of it. So obviously it's going to be Kansas City, Tennessee. On the other side, Minnesota took it to, San Francisco took it to Minnesota. Richard Sherman with an interception that, in my opinion, it was midway through the game. It really wasn't like the last play of the game. But to me, it just decided it. Minnesota could get nothing going. They literally have a great running attack. Minnesota has a very good running attack. They finished the game with 21 rushing yards. So running the ball was not an option. I mean, Kirk Cousins, 21-29 for 172. He went 1-1. No receiver had over 50 receiving yards. San Francisco played a completely complete game, and you know that for the fact that Jimmy Garoppolo finished 11-19 for 130 yards. So they didn't really have to open up the offense too much to get this win, Jay. Listen, I know you're a Jimmy G fan, so I'm gonna leave that there and just let you bask in the San Francisco glory.
I'm still bumming that we didn't get to see the Saints take on San Francisco, but because it was Minnesota, yeah, they didn't really have to open it up too much. I didn't think for a second that the Vikings were going to get through San Francisco. And they didn't really have to – I mean, San Francisco didn't have to try that hard to keep them out of it. So I am a Jimmy G fan. Where I've got them going next is where I really stumble across some issues. But to me, that was going to happen either way. San Francisco was going to handle the Vikings that day.
Oh, it was great in that way, and I honestly do. I mean, this isn't to be a dick. I do believe a Saints 49ers game is far more competitive and far more enjoyable to watch because, you know, Drew Brees and that offense, they're high octane. You might actually have to open up the playbook to keep with them because of that. But mm-hmm. Minnesota, on the other hand, if their run game doesn't get going, they don't really get going. They don't run some big high flying offense. They are all about establish that run game and work off of that. So when you only rush for 20 yards, it's really hard to get something going. Really hard. Especially when you have, you know, Cook. Dalvin Cook should be good for more than, I think he only had like 12 yards rushing total. Dalvin Cook should be, you know, good for more than 12 yards in a game. It's just, it shows you how good the San Francisco team really is. And there's a reason they're playing to be in that Super Bowl. Last game, Green Bay, Seattle. I took Seattle in this one. I really did think that Seattle had the offense, had the defense, had everything going at the right time to be competitive and handle Green Bay. But I was wrong. 28-23, Aaron Rodgers, 16-27 for 243 and two touchdowns in Lambeau. You know, he's comfortable there. But on the, you know, Russell Wilson stayed right there with him. 21-31, 277 and a touchdown. Listen, everybody, I've seen it 100 times. I don't know if you guys have seen this image. People talking about how it was a first down called when the guys were nowhere, you were pretty far behind the line. Listen, bad calls are bad calls. We've seen about 4 of them in the playoffs so far this year that have decided. You got to get past that. You still got to put yourself in the position to win, and Seattle just wasn't able to do that, Russ.
No, they weren't. And if Russell Wilson, if it isn't like Russell Wilson – or maybe two or three quarterbacks ever, that game is even further apart. It might have been 28-0.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was constantly being brought. I watched whoever the Seattle running back was, whoever they plugged in, whether it was, you know, Lynch, Holmes, whoever, just run in the line and do nothing time and time and time and time again. And eventually, mm-hmm. in the second half, they just gave it up and said, all right, we're either going to throw the ball or Wilson's going to run it.
Yeah.
And when you become one-dimensional, more predictable like that, it's a miracle if you can keep the game within one score. And that's almost what Russell Wilson did. But it turns out Green Bay's defense is good enough when you can only do one thing against them. So they move on, and it's frustrating because I want Green Bay to lose,
yeah,
unabashedly. But for a team that has discovered the run game this year, Aaron Rodgers finally looked a little bit like Aaron Rodgers again. And that's not a good combination for them losing.
No. Listen, I will say that I agree with you. Whether it was giving it to Travis Homer or giving it to Marshawn Lynch, they ran in the line and there was nothing. Lynch finished 12 carries for 26 yards, averaged 2 yards a carry. Marshawn Lynch averaged 2 yards a carry. That's something I never thought I'd hear in my life. Homer, 3 carries for 13 yards, averaged about 4.5 yards a carry. Russell Wilson, 7 carries for 64 yards, averaged almost a first down a carry. So you see where they went. One, I think Pete Carroll got a little too fixed on we have Marshawn back, but the problem is you don't really have Marshawn back. You have a guy that got bored and decided he wanted to play football at the end of the year back, and he really wasn't ready to do what he needed to do. So I think they probably should have gotten away from Marshawn a little earlier in that game, but they waited a little too long, and it was just too much ground to make up. I agree with you, though, Russ, that you said, had it been not been Russell Wilson or maybe one or two other quarterbacks, this game doesn't end the way it does. And this, to me, is a perfect reason why I have to solidify it. I said at the start of the year, it was a bold take, and I, looking back at it now, I sometimes wonder, why the hell would you say that? But I said it. Russell Wilson is the best quarterback in the NFL. Russell Wilson proved that by keeping a team that had nothing really going against a defense that was able to handle him in this game. It was a 5-point game, and they had opportunities to win it. This guy is a different level talent, and oh my God, if they could get a real name running back on there with Lockett and DK Metcalf, this offense could be very, very, very impossible to stop. I really think.
Or just an offensive line.
That would be nice, too. That would be
I'll settle
nice
for that.
Yeah. But, I mean, and I said it in a text. I have to say it in a verbally, too. Russ, I know you and I both had, you know, comments about him going into the draft. But, Jay, your boy DK Metcalf can play the game of football. This guy is very good. And I think in a year or two, when he really understands the game and understands the NFL, this guy could be very, very tough to stop, especially if Russell Wilson can keep slinging it the way he has been.
Yeah, no, he's got a good quarterback to work off of in his first time playing in the NFL. And he starts putting himself in the right positions and using his body that he's very gifted with. He'll be lights out. He'll be among the top 15 best wideouts every year for the next couple of years. At least he should be.
He should be. So. If he doesn't get complacent, he definitely can be. He definitely can be. And that's, you know, that's a good thing. So, all right, well, we just recapped them all. So you know who they're playing. Tennessee, Kansas City, Green Bay, San Francisco. Jay, I'll let you go first here. Who's going to the Super Bowl for both sides?
Oh, God. I had such a hard time trying to sit down and pick clear winners. Like, I literally, between Tennessee and Kansas City, I waffled between the two of them multiple times.
Well, here you go. Here you go. Right now, Kansas City is 75% favorite. The spread's a touchdown, 7 points. Tennessee's plus 7. Over-under is 53.
Yeah, see, Kansas City lost last year on a costly penalty by Dee Ford, who no longer plays for them anymore, and Tennessee only allows 12.5 points per game. The matchup is going to become between on the ground with Tennessee, but then Kansas City's just going to air it out with all the weapons they got. Like, this is why I get stuck on this, but I'm going to go with the favorite that's predicted. I want Tennessee to win because I want them to keep chugging along. But I got Kansas 27, Tennessee 17, and the under.
You're going under, 27-17. All right, like it. It's...
Don't take what I say for gambling purposes, because I would have been screwed in the national championship game. I would have lost all my money.
All right, so you got Kansas City, coming out of the AFC. Now you're going over the NFC. Green Bay, I'll give you the numbers so you have them, but
I've got them too.
Yeah. Green Bay 72% favorite, spread 7.5, and over under is 46. So
Rodgers going up a 10. He's going up against a defense that only allows 10 points per game through San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Green Bay also hasn't been held under 20 points all year since week one, where they only scored 10 points. I, unfortunately, also do not want this team to win, but they're going to, just because it's in division. But that's Green Bay. Green Bay is going to squeak one out on San Francisco 27-24. I think Rodgers has a golden opportunity to potentially go to his next Super Bowl. He hasn't won a Super Bowl in almost a decade. So to bookend 10 years of his career with one being a Super Bowl championship and a potential one, I think it's a nice ending for him. But he's also not walking away from the game anytime soon. But it's been 10 years since he's won one. So I'll go Green Bay. So you got Green Bay and Kansas City in the Super Bowl.
Green Bay, Kansas City. I like it. Russ, over to you. We'll start with Green Bay, San Francisco. And who you taking to come out of the NFC?
Well, first off, I can in good conscience take Green Bay because, well, FTP, I do not want to see the Packers in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So I can't even try and will it into existence. Maybe I just jinxed it. Bottom line is San Francisco is incredibly balanced, and if you want to beat them, you have to do one thing, at least one thing, very, very well. And you can't have a glaring weakness. Case in point, Minnesota. Glaring weakness being Kirk Cousins. We saw the 10 points they put up. That's who San Francisco is. Aaron Rodgers, I think, has taken a step back recently. Dude's still good. Still top half starting quarterback, at least. But he's not as efficient as he used to be. And I don't know that when it really comes down to it, with this pass rush, with this D-line that the 49ers have, that they can continue this rushing success that they've had. So I'm going to take San Francisco. Bit of trivia there. Since 2013, every single Super Bowl winner has either been a number one or a number two seed. All but one of them have been their conference's number one. So I got to put at least one number one in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And the only surviving one is San Francisco. So I'll take the 49ers there.
Okay. Over to Tennessee, Kansas City.
All right. Well, I could tell you that only 16 teams have ever played four playoff games, right, which is what Tennessee would have to do to get into the Super Bowl. We've had 53 Super Bowls so far, so that really tells you it's very, very difficult to do, and nobody since 2010 has started by playing the wild card round on the road and ended up playing in the Super Bowl. That's, again, the path Tennessee would have to take. But more importantly, Vrabel has come out saying he wouldn't actually cut his dick off to win a Super Bowl. So that mojo's gone.
No,
so
that hurts you. Yeah, that hurts you.
That's my actual analysis.
No, that's fine. It's a great analysis.
And it's gone now because we don't think he'd cut off his genitalia.
All right, so Russ is taking the Chiefs. I like it. Listen, you both put a point in one of these games that I, was going to use in some way or another. No, I was not going to talk about Mike Vrabel chopping off his penis, but that's a great little bonus. Jay, you touched on it about this game is going to come down to one team doing what they do well better than the other, and I think that's where we're going to see Kansas City get stalled. I think we're going to see this is just like Baltimore. This is a team predicated on getting that offense firing early and getting that ball in their hand as often as possible so that they can put up points as often as possible. It seems to be the logic of the game. Score as often as you can usually leads to good things. But
that's interesting.
It's a theory, guys.
Someone told Patricia?
We're going to test it out. We're going to see what happens. Hey, listen, Daryl Bevel would have done it if he could have had all of his players healthy all year and he didn't have to listen to Matt Patricia. I got you, Daryl Bevel. You're my boy for life. But see, that's where I think we're going to run into the thing. Tennessee is the complete polar opposite. Tennessee wants to grind it down, eat up the minutes. Our defense is going to keep you out of the end zone when they have to. We're going to put up the points we need to get the win. We've got a running back right now that is just cannot be stopped. Like, that's their big challenge right now. If you're Kansas City, you need to say, Derrick Henry is all we care about. Tannehill passes for 500 yards. He passes for 500 yards. that if that happens, that happens. Derrick Henry is going to be what's going to kill us, and I think it's going to keep going for them in this game. I see a Tennessee victory here. I see this being another very low-scoring affair, though. I do see this being like a 21-17 kind of game, but I just think you're going to see Kansas City get the ball, score when they can, but I just think they're going to be sitting around far too much, and it's going to lead to some mistakes, them not being able to stay fresh. On the other side, Tennessee's just going to keep rolling, keep steaming on. You're going to see Derrick Henry touch the ball 25 to 30 times again, and it's going to lead to a victory. It's not the most entertaining football unless you are someone that likes to watch a running back just clobber people, and a lot of people want to see the other side. A lot of people want to see Patrick Mahomes, sidearm passes and all that stuff. And, it's entertaining to watch. But at the end of the day, they're the team that's going to execute, and I think Tennessee gets this victory. On the other side, Russ, I agree with you that Rodgers has dropped a little bit. I actually had it written down that, to me, Rodgers went from being an efficient gunslinger to now I think he's just genuinely a gunslinger. I think he takes a lot more risks than he probably should. Because he looks at it like, what I have my Super Bowl. I'm arguably the greatest Packers quarterback ever. I still think Brett Favre is, but enough people would make the argument that it's Rodgers. So Rodgers has reached that plateau where he doesn't really have that driving force like he used to, that chip on his shoulder. A big chip is the fact that he was asked on draft day, are you upset that the San Francisco 49ers, his home team, didn't draft him? And he said, I think the 49ers are going to be upset they didn't draft me. Whether that's still something in his mind or not, we don't know. But I do see that. I see Rodgers as becoming that guy who he sometimes will see the clear-cut, safe move, and he'll just think, ooh, Devontae is quasi-open. But over here, this guy's wide open. Yeah, let's go with Devontae. And it works out sometimes because Devontae Adams is an amazing talent. But to me, Rodgers seems like that guy who he won't take the safe bet over the opportunity for the big home run. And we saw Brett Favre do that for years. It worked out in sometimes, but it's also the reason Brett Favre has more interceptions than anyone else in the history of the NFL. So, that being said, I agree that San Francisco is an absolutely complete team. You have to be able to do at least one facet to perfection, and I personally don't think it's going to be your run game. Going up against that defensive line for San Francisco and Bosa having the year he's having, I don't think your running game is going to flourish, so it's got to be in the passing game, and a combination of that secondary playing the way they did against Minnesota, against these other teams. Listen, this team's had to go up against some great. They had to go up against Russell Wilson twice this past year, and they split the series, but Russell Wilson still didn't have ball out games. So that combined, Rodgers has to be near perfect, and I just don't think it happens. So I'm going San Francisco in the Super Bowl, taking on the Tennessee Titans to finish this puppy up.
I'm just so happy that someone had the balls to go Tennessee because I wanted to do that. So thank you for doing that for me.
You're welcome. I do these kind of things every once in a while just for your entertainment.
I appreciate it. I hope they win, though.
I think this is honestly, I'm trying to think of a better analogy, but these two teams couldn't be more polar opposite. This is a team that is predicated on just ground and pound football. We can throw the ball. If we need to throw the ball, we'll throw the ball. They have the receivers to do it. They have enough talent on that offensive side with the receivers to do it. But the problem is you have a hot hand. You're going to ride that hot hand. And Derrick Henry is just he's a load to have to handle. But on the flip side, Kansas City has the ability to run the ball. The problem is you have Travis Kelce. You have Hill. You have all these guys that are just jets out there. And you have a quarterback that can throw it from end zone to end zone with a flick of a wrist. So it's one of those things where they are just the most polar opposite teams, but it really is going to be, does Tennessee execute on the ground more effectively than Kansas City executes in the air? And I think they do. Mm-hmm. I just really do. There's a lot less room for error there. You still got to put that ball in the air and hope that a corner or a linebacker doesn't get to it before the receiver does. Whereas with the running game, you just got to hope that line can hold for a second for Derrick Henry to hit a gap and fall forward. Derrick Henry's I think he's 6'2", 6'3". If he falls forward, that's 5 yards. He literally could get to the line of scrimmage and just fall down, and he's going to get 4 or 5 yards. So I think it's going to be a lot more Tennessee than Kansas City. But what do I know? Kansas City just put up 51 points on Houston out of nowhere. So this could go either way. Could go either way. All right, moving on. We got our, as usual, one part of the show that's not going away, here to stay. Play of the week and game of the week. I'm going to go first because I don't have to go very far for my game of the week. We literally just talked about it. My game of the week is going to be the Tennessee Titans against the Kansas City Chiefs. I looked high and low.
You bastard man.
Yep, I looked high and low, NBA, NHL. You know, I even looked at EuroLeague soccer. I really did. And
they
listen,
do.
Madrid, they got a hell of a striker. They really do. But I just couldn't do it. This is, to me, the best game because this is just what I said. It is two very opposite teams. It is two game plans that couldn't be any different, any more different, going against each other. This is the let's see whose game plan actually works better in this one-and-done scenario. And I just think that has to be Kansas City. It has to be Tennessee. I keep looking at that Kansas City logo and I keep saying their name. So I'm very excited. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. As for my play of the game, again, there's a trend here. If anyone's listening to the show, you can pick up on the trend pretty fast. I like Tennessee. Wanted to go with Derrick Henry's jump pass for a touchdown against the Ravens, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it because there was just one better play. Jonnu Smith, wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans, goes up with a nice one-handed bobbling catch to start the scoring for the teams, and this is just one heck of a catch. Listen, in the last 10 years, we've seen some insane catches from some insane receivers. This guy did it with one hand, bobbled it a bunch of times, and still had the presence of mind to track it, get it down, and hold on to it for a big score. So I liked it, and it sounded a little something like this.
Third and goal, but back it up to the 12. Tannehill tosses, end zone. Oh! Jonnu Smith, touchdown! Spectacular grab!
All right, well, since I am a, as Russ said, son of a bitch, pain in the butt, whatever. Russ, time to scramble. Give me your play of the game and your game of the week.
Well, I'm going to start with my play of the week because I have that one ready, and I'm going to fly by the seat of my pants for the game of the week. my play of the week was Philip Forsberg doing his own version of the lacrosse goal in one of the most unconventional ways to pop the puck back up on a stick. Righty going around on what would be his backhand.
Mm-hmm.
Flips it over onto the other side, somehow picks it up on the toe, and in true lacrosse flat fashion, throws the puck in off the goalie's side. Doesn't place it in nice and gently, doesn't bounce it off someone's head like Svechnikov had, literally launches the puck completely parallel to the ice, and it goes in. And in the second period, he also tried to, you know, shoot a puck between his legs. It got on net, but it didn't score. So creativity is coming to hockey. And it's wonderful. And this is what we actually tune in to watch hockey for. So I loved it. I loved that somebody else is pulling it off. It should be a rule. Instead of the shootout, we just try this for three times in a row. That'd be fun. But I got to give it up to Forsberg for being someone else willing to try it and score.
All right. That was the play. Sounded a little something like this.
Duchesne takes over. Face off loose for Forsberg. He's got some open ice. Lifts it up and tries to put it in and does! There's the goal he's been looking for. Full speed behind the net. Lacrosse style. Upper corner. Forsberg ties it.
Yeah, no, I like that goal. It's very, very nice. I liked it so much, I even stood up, walked to the other side of the room, and made my wife watch the play because it was that good. Someone else needed to share in the experience with me. All right, you're flying by the seat of your pants, Russ. I'm hoping your Google search worked fast enough. What is your game of the week?
I got something. But first off, either thank you or you're welcome or I'm sorry, Aaron, that you had to watch that. either one, it applies. My game of the week, I'm going to come back home on the 20th, coming up this Monday. The Wings are going to play the Avalanche. Now, not only do we get to see Nathan MacKinnon score as many goals as he wants, I'm going to say this is Jeff Blashill's last game. Detroit Red Wings head coach. And that's why it's going to be interesting. The last good, intense rivalry we had was against Colorado. And when that ended, that was the start of the decline, really, of the franchise and that dynasty. yes, it picked up a little bit more as we had the rivalry with the Penguins, but hey, that game's not on the schedule, and I had to scramble, so forgive me. But Detroit, Colorado, Gallant's out there. He's not going to last long. I think that's when it comes to a head, that he calls up his old buddy Stevie and goes, hey, I got this other offer. What are we doing? And that's when it all clicks and happens.
Okay.
So as the farewell tour, probably like an 8-2 loss, because that's apparently in fashion now. Last game.
All right. Before Jay, I want to get to yours, but I want to ask the question, Russ, because you kind of led me there, and I was going to ask it a little later on, but we're here right now. It's real quick. Do you think Steve Yzerman has spoken to Gallant in the last day or two?
Maybe not.
Say I want you to be here, but just talk to him and maybe planted the seed of idea of would you be willing to come here?
Oh God, yeah. I bet it happened within an hour of the news coming out. He called him and said, hey, buddy, where's your head at?
Okay.
Hey, former teammate, former roommate, former line mate, how you feeling today? How you doing? You need a beer? Let's go talk.
All right.
I can almost promise it happened.
All right. I like it. All right, Jay. Play of the week, game of the week, and then if you feel like chiming in.
I mean, I can't function right now because my man just dropped like a bomb on me because it's going to happen. I think he's right.
Well, I would like to say this. I'm pretty sure before anything was confirmed, before anything was thought, our little buddy that's about to talk right now, Russ, said Steve Yzerman will come back to Detroit. It was before anything. Stevie was still with Tampa. There was nothing to go for it. And it happened. It happened. So, Jay, your words are, we have to take them to bank.
Russ just like opened up a curtain in my dark, dark room. Buffalo pounded us 5-1. The Islanders pounded us 8-2. You're getting Crosby's second game back with Malkin from his injury. They're probably going to pound us 7-1. You got to take Bobrovsky on. It's like Russ just called it. So hang on. Let's go back to our regular scheduled program, but I want to touch on that in a minute. Play of the week. It's not even a play.
It's
Troy Aikman crying. Because the man is watching his, like, someone he looked up to get inducted to the Hall of Fame in Jimmy Johnson. And the fact that they had a camera up there, first of all, I don't know why he's wearing a coat in a control room. It
because
be
they don't have glass where they, like, their booth doesn't have glass.
So use Fair. Plastic okay. cups.
God damn you, Russ.
Theirs
actually goes out, like looks out onto the field, like with no glass or anything like that. It's so,
okay.
it's so that they can kind of poke their head out when the teams get like close to goal lines.
So that caught my eye, but what else caught my eye? And maybe I'm watching too much Star Wars movies lately, but it's like, it was like a young Padawan watching his master get like inducted into the Jedi Hall of Fame. It was beautiful. And the fact that, like, you get to see some, like, emotion behind the league where it's like, I'm better than you, I'm bigger than you, we're smarter than you. It's just, it's always touching. Like, those 30 for 30 get me every time. So this got me. So it's not a play, but it kind of is in my world. So.
No, I like that one. I like that one. And I will say, that and the Bill Cowher one, those were emotional moments. Those were, you could really tell how much those guys cared. But I will say there was something, and it's not a play, but I do like your call for it, Jay. I will say there was one thing, and I'm not a big Troy Aikman fan. It might be because he spends time around Joe Buck, and I don't like Joe Buck at all. But it might be rubbing off on him.
What's wrong with Joe Buck?
Yeah. But Troy Aikman, after the announcement, after he had time to talk and all that, did say that he feels out of Troy Aikman, Michael Irving, Emmett Smith, and Jimmy Johnson, that Jimmy should have been the first of them to go into the Hall of Fame. Out of the triplets, it should have been Jimmy Johnson first. And that to me says that's how much respect I have for this guy. It shouldn't have been me. It shouldn't have been one of the best receivers ever. It shouldn't have been the all-time leading rusher. It should have been our head coach first. And that to me says a lot.
Yeah, it was beautiful stuff. That's
really,
my play of the week.
Really, that's a great play of the week. Not a lot of audio for it, but we do have the announcement of it. It sounded a little something like this.
There's always room for one surprise guest, especially when it's this man coming in right now from the Pro Football Hall of Fame, David Baker, the president.
Kurt, good to see you, Kurt.
How are you?
Good to see you.
How are you doing, sir?
Good. Hall of Famer.
Great to see you.
Hall of Famer.
Let the man
Hall of Famer. Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Coach, on behalf of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and all those fans that are watching and all of us who love this game, thank you, Coach, for all you've done for the game. Thank you for all you're going to do for the game. Thank you for the history that you've made and the lives that you've impacted. Thank you. It's my great honor to tell you that you're going to be the 328th Hall of Famer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And your legacy is going to be in Canton, Ohio forever. Congratulations, Coach.
It's a great, great, great call, Jay. I like it a lot. Now, if I didn't screw you, what's your game of the week?
So I was going football, but I'm just going to steer away from that. Game of the week for me, I'm going to go to the NHL All-Star Game. Because I think if they can finally do it right and don't make NHL players look so damn awkward on TV, they've got the 3-on-3 with the women's hockey team that's going to be a part of it. I think they're finally learning how to do an All-Star game, albeit the most unimportant event in a season. I am looking forward to this year's All-Star game. When I heard that they're doing a women's 3-on-3, give me 3-on-3 like just by itself in a league. I'll watch it. So I will go the All-Star game for the game of the week.
All right.
Well, lucky you. The Three Ice League was just announced, which is a 3-on-3 exclusively league.
What?
Yeah, it's called Three Ice. Yeah, seriously. Possibly coming to an Armchair Sports Talk podcast near you.
Oh, my God. Do you have the lottery numbers next? First of all, Blashill's getting fired. We have a 3-on-3 league. Like, what's happening right now?
Oh, if I had that, well, then we'll just cut that part of the podcast out, right? Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Very fair. Very fair.
And now, after Russ giving us those numbers, we're back to the show. Listen, Jay or Russ made the prediction. Jay wants to talk about it. I open the floor to you two. Blashill, biding his time, probably going to be out soon, is what we're feeling. Gerard Gallant is available, has a lot of history with Steve Yzerman. Jay, I mean, talk to me about it. Let me hear it.
So the one thing I was hoping to have time to do when we got to this today, and if he's getting fired on MLK Day, I'm going to not have time to do it. But the measurement that I want to use for whether it's right for him to go or not right now is, like, I literally want to look at every player's career stats and see how many people on this team are having career lows collectively, because there's got to be a handful of people who are just dipping so low in their statistical totals, and it's because of the system that they're within, and the system that they're within is supposed to be managed by the coach, and this is the type of shit that the coach's head is on the table for. So I don't know if we could look it up that quickly, but that's where, like, my brain was going, is how do you give me something to fire a head coach other than that we're all bored and tired of watching this shit ass product? Okay. It's got to be career lows.
Here's a question, and again, as I've said, when it comes to hockey this year, I've watched some, but I really, this has been an off year for me. I really cannot get into this team. It's been tough, but it's a blaringly obvious question, and it's probably a bit of both, but what does it actually say to you about this team, Jay, that I'm a big fan of this guy and I've stood up for him a lot, but that Tyler Bertuzzi is our leading goal scorer? The fact that Anthony Seau is really not doing much of anything, but that our top three...
5 goals.
Yeah, 5 goals and 14 assists. But that, Mantha is 10 points behind Bertuzzi. Larkin is our second, which we kind of figured he'd be the first, and probably by the end of the year will be. But that Philip Hronek, Robbie Fabry... Filppula, these are the top guys for this team right now in the way of points and goal scoring.
It is a problem, and because there is such a lack of production of scoring, there's another stat or another accounting stat you can look at that Russ absolutely hates. But if you look at the plus minus on this team, there's one player who's above zero. That's it. That's how often they are on the ice that negatively impacts the team, that the whole team is bad.
The underlying thing there is the Wings are on track for their second lowest goal differential in franchise history.
Right now you have three guys that don't have a negative sign next to their name.
Yep.
Brian Lashoff is plus one. That's where Jay's alluding.
Who's played like 10 games. Yeah.
Danny DeKeyser is exactly at zero. Damn you, Danny DeKeyser.
Also a very small amount of games.
Darren Helm, Darren Helm is at zero. Everyone else has a minus. And what to me is bad is I'm seeing a lot of twos and threes as the first number. So a lot of these guys are in the teens, but we've got Mike Green is negative 25. Filppula is negative 31. Anthony Seau is negative 35.
My man.
Hironic is negative 21. There's a lot of negatives on here. And by the way, in case you didn't know, Luke Glendening has 6 goals, 3 assists for 9 points, and he's negative 14. So he's got more negative than he does positive.
How many goals was that? 6. Six more than Advocator, you bum.
6 more than Advocator. But he's got more negative points than he does positive for us right now. Just throwing that out there for you, Jay. Sorry, just throwing that out.
But to go to your question, though, there is no offensive production. There is no tangible goalie stats that are helping us out. There's not a lot of anything. So when the whole thing is falling apart from top to bottom, I mean, there's only one guy you can really can be that expendable, and that's the head coach. So it's gotta happen. And if Russ gets it right, I'm gonna scream to the street. It's just excellent.
Well, Russ, I'm not gonna change the question, any. It's going for you. What does it say about this team that a guy who we all kind of call more of a grinder, you know, effort man, is our leading, you know, goal scorer right now?
Well, I guess I'll say on one side, it means Blashill's done at least something to develop guys. But at the same time, Tyler Bertuzzi is getting more opportunity here than he probably would anywhere else.
That's true.
So while he is doing well, a lot of that is, hey, if you give me 20 kicks at the can, I damn well better kick that can. He's doing good. He's playing well. He's arguably been the second best forward on this team this year. But I think it's a real showing of the just complete talent deficit that this team is working with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not necessarily blaming Blashill that this is all his fault, but he's not helping. And the fact that Tyler Bertuzzi, all-star Tyler Bertuzzi.
you call him by what he is.
Yeah. Yeah, is the shining example of success on this team, is emblematic of what dire straits the team is in.
Absolutely.
It's troublesome.
Now, Jay, when we talked about the team last week, and I really feel like I'm doing interview here because I'm literally jotting down the questions I want to ask as we're going. But we talked about the team last week, and I asked the question of if I put you in Steve Yzerman's shoes and I let you take control of this team, Where do we need to address first? And you said from the goal out, something I very much agree with you on. But again, you even your words said that Bernier is maybe a good backup goalie for us. He's not the guy you're putting between the pipes day in and day out. Yet Bernier has 10 of our 12 wins. I feel like that has to say a lot more about this team than the fact that Bertuzzi is our leading scorer, is that we are getting no help from goalies, especially when our number one goalie has 2 wins.
No, this is why I did not want Howard back on this team. We gave him a 1-year contract for him to come back, and I wanted his ass gone. Like, we knew where the team was going, you know, not in between the pipes, but keeping him around. I mean, we were just as good of using Bernier than Howard, and one's getting paid, I think, just a couple $100,000 more dollars. So it still is my goal to fix in between the pipes. I look at what's happening at the Rangers right now.
Yeah.
They're not the best team in the world offensively.
No.
They've got Lundqvist, who's an all-star goalie, but then they've got these two other rookies behind them that are Georgiev and Russell. Help me out.
Just Jorkin.
Thank you. I still didn't hear what you said, but thank you.
Fitzjorkin? Is that what you said? Fitzjorkin?
I can't pronounce it.
Okay.
You're Jorkin.
But it's like
Jorkin.
Jorkin's lotion, number 3.
Yep, nailed it.
Like they have a plethora of goalies in their system, and it doesn't really matter what's happening on the other end. So I'm jealous. We don't have a depth of anything, but I'd still start a goalie.
Okay. Well, I mean, to put perspective
regardless of what Bernie is doing.
To put perspective to it, Jimmy's faced 550 shots this season, according to the numbers I'm looking at. He saved 482 of them. So not great, which means he's given up 68 goals. Not enough for, you know, the fact that he's played 19 games and he's given up 68 goals. That comes out to 4.26 goal, or he averages 4.26 goals a game. He's got an 87% save percentage. This guy, he really is. He has dropped off. He is not the goalie I would argue he's not the goalie he was 3 years ago, but he's not the goalie we remember, that guy that really was at one point up there in the name of goalies in the league. He really was a good goalie, and he does not have it anymore. I mean, you look at Bernier, 806 shots faced, saved 729 of them, so he's let in 77 goals. He's played in almost 10 more games than Jimmy, and he's giving up three goals, averaging about three goals a game and a 90% save percentage. So it's not like it steps up that much higher. They're really not that far apart when you really think about it, and it's just, I agree with you, Jay. The goalie is the first, he's the last line of defense, but he's the first thing we need to address, and hopefully if we make some changes to the coach, that'll be something he really gets on Stevie about. I really think he needs to.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and what's terrifying, to add to that, Bernier, who has that 904 save percentage, has 14 goals saved above average. So if you just put an average goalie in there by the metrics compared to what he's done, that goalie would have given up 14 more goals mm-hmm. than what Bernier had.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. No, it's tough. It's tough. All right, well, with just the last few minutes, I wanted to touch on this because I mentioned it before the show. It's something we've mentioned on the show a couple times over the last few weeks as it's developed. But earlier today, the Atlanta Hawks announced officially they are done pursuing Andre Drummond. That takes a big chip off the table for us because Drummond is on an expiring contract. He was someone that we were looking to probably move, knowing that re-signing him probably wasn't going to be in the cards. You want to get something while you can. So, Russ, first on that, you know, how much of a letdown is that for us that we're getting rid of, we're kind of losing on an opportunity to trade Drummond at a time where he appears to be in pretty good demand. But my second question is, because I've heard a lot of reports that Derrick Rose is a name people are looking at. One, how do you feel about Derrick Rose leaving? He's one of the bright spots on this team. But two, are you getting a little afraid that teams are going to start looking at the younger talent, too, as potential to try to trade for? Guys like Dumbuya, who are having a great, you know, start right now. There are pieces that could be on the up.
Oh, the first person that calls asking for Sekou Doumbouya, you hang up, you block their number, and then you go to their house and you smash their phone. That is completely off the table. Him, Kennard, even Mihaljevic, with the game he had the other day.
Yep.
No. That's the window that you're trying to build from. Anyone older than that? Yeah, let's talk. Derrick Rose, bless his heart, he is trying so damn hard to make this team not awful.
Yeah.
And it's not enough. So, yeah, if you can get a first round, you can get anything more or less from him, go let him compete, right? Yeah. Go let him be around talented players other than when he's going to be at the All-Star game for the skills competition.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, that would be great for him. That'd be a nice reward for him. I am scared about the Drummond talks going off because he plays a position really that there's not a premium on it anymore. There's only a handful of teams that would even appreciate having a center really that does what he does. Now you're going to take one of them away. Every team that gets removed from that significantly drops the chances that he gets traded.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know. Charlotte maybe is who they go to next. I really don't know what team would try and step up and get his expiring deal.
Yeah, and no, I'm just trying to think. There were a couple teams that put their names into the running, but you haven't really heard much since. It's a weird situation. It really is. I agree with you. The Doumbouya thing was just because I know you and I have both said that we really like what we see out of this guy. He's a raw talent, but there's definitely potential there and there's room to expand. So I agree with you. Mm-hmm. That's someone that if that call comes through, the other side needs to be, you're telling me we're getting like Ben Simmons or we're getting like someone like Zion Williams or a guy who is still young and still has a lot of up to go, where you're not losing anything in the trade. You call and tell me I'm getting a second-round pick and two guys that haven't made it out of the G League in their career. That's an immediate hang up the phone, block the number, and like you said, go over and smash the phone. Jay, over to you on this because you know me. I like to, if I ever have a franchise, you're my GM. I'm going to let you run it into the ground or make it, you know, successful as you can.
Even but a basketball league?
I will let you run any team. We're dumb enough to let you. Yeah, we're dumb enough to let you run our fantasy leagues. I might as well give you a real league too.
Shirelli
got a couple jobs, so why not?
Yeah, that's true. He would. He'd have Jason Momoa as the power forward next to his brother Steven Adams if he could.
You would sell tickets.
No, I would absolutely sell tickets. We'd have a very large female fan base, but it would sell tickets. No, but Jay, as I said, Atlanta off the table, not interested anymore. As I guess we get closer to the deadline, but also teams start taking their names out of contention, how much does your price for Andre Drummond start decreasing? There's not as much demand, so you can't really bid or pit teams against each other. You kind of know, hey, Atlanta said they're off the table. New York said they're off the table. I know there's only one other team looking, and I know what they have to offer. So how much does the demand for Drummond and what we can offer or what we can expect to get in return from Drummond start to diminish to the point that it's not even worth it anymore?
Yeah, I mean, you lose leverage for sure when you go to the table with other teams when there's not other teams. But I think without making such a broad statement like that, you got to see what else is, like, what's their corresponding move then? Like, what was the alternative to Andre Drummond? So, I mean, the deadline's coming up, so we're going to find out how much leverage we actually have. But, like, I got to imagine if teams are pulling out because there's another avenue they'd rather, you know, hedge their bets on or, you know, cut their losses on something else, it doesn't help sell someone who's most likely just going to walk if he doesn't get traded. So I think we're stuck in a bad spot. I mean, it just reeks of Ndamukong Suh all over again, which scares me because we need to get better. All these teams in the city need to get better as we get closer to the next season. So if we're going to have an asset diminish, they have to fix that quicker than the trade deadline is going to take it away from them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here. My last question, it's a real quick one. Give it to you as we go. I'm going to say bye to Russ. And Russ, the last question is, more likely, Andre Drummond is on another team after the trade deadline, or Jeff Blashill is still the head coach of the Red Wings after the trade deadline?
So is it more likely that Drummond
is still
stays?
Yeah, more likely that Drummond is still, or I'm sorry, more likely that Andre Drummond is playing for another franchise after the trade deadline, or that Jeff Blashill is still standing on that bench for the Detroit Red Wings in the same capacity after the trade deadline?
I guess I got to go my call from earlier and say that it's more likely Drummond gets moved.
So you're saying Blashill's okay? All right. Yep.
Yeah,
okay.
Earlier I said, hey, Blashill's gone on the 20th because I couldn't find my other game of the week because you ruined my Music City Miracle 20 years ago. Come over again.
Yeah, I got
but,
you.
But well played. You've thrown me completely for a loop.
I do what I do. thanks a lot again, Russ. You are the stat man. You make us sound much smarter than we really are. Put you to the test, and now you have a chore. You have to figure out, is LSU the most dominant college team in all of college sports ever? It's a challenge, man. We'll see what you can do with it.
I'm going to have to look up some handball records.
Yeah, there you go. Jay, over to you, man. Really appreciate you being on the show. And same question. More likely Drummond is playing somewhere else, or that Blashill's sitting behind that bench still after the trade deadline?
Drummond's playing somewhere else.
Okay. All right. I like
it. I'll just take the opposite.
Yeah, no worries about that. But as always, man, appreciate being on. Love it, man.
Hey, I'm here for this every week, man. You always have me here.
Absolutely. And I'm the host. I don't have to answer the questions I ask, but I'm going to answer this one anyway. I'm going to go against both of you. I'm going to say Blashill is still sitting on that bench after the trade deadline. I don't like it, but unfortunately, I just think it's more likely that happens. I think Drummy is going to be a Piston. I don't think they're going to be able to get anything done in time that merits what they want to get in return. So we'll see what happens with it. But, as always, I'm your host, Eric Dorsch. That's one small step for us, one giant leap back in Detroit sports broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.